I hope you're having a great Friday and that you're looking forward to a wonderful weekend. And I hope that includes some Lord's Day activities with your home congregation. Everybody needs one. And if you don't have one, you need to get out there and find one. If you're actively looking right now for a place and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, please come check us out. And maybe we can convince you to be part of our little part of the family. Fridays, I also say thank you to those of you supporting Into the Word for this radio station. If you'd like to assist in that, it's easy enough to do. Just write down the contact information at the end of today's program. Then you can send a one-time or ongoing gift of any amount to that address, and it'll help pay the bills. Thanks for taking care of that. We're going to turn our attention back to Exodus chapter 21. We are in verse 22. We're looking at a variety of things that God and Moses are discussing, talking about. Moses is writing it down. In the hours after the delivery of the Ten Commandments on the day of Pentecost, 50 days after Israel left Egypt, the 50th day when they meet God and hear His voice from Mount Sinai. And so basically the Ten Commandments were a catch-all overview of what God expected the Israelis to buckle down and act like. As I keep mentioning, the purpose of the law is not to make good people good, it's actually to make bad people behave themselves. So the law was effectively God saying, knock it off. The Ten Commandments has two sections. It's responsibilities to God. Make sure you only worship Him and in the right way. And the other section was treat other people appropriately. Don't murder them. Don't cheat on your spouse. Don't envy people and take their stuff and lie about them. And so that was the overview. That was the kind of catch-all thing. And now we've got the more specific things. And the way I picture it is that Moses is kind of talking to God during this time and probably bringing up things that have been brought up to him by people over the last 7 weeks, because he's been acting as the judge of Israel. So here we go, verse 22. It says, when men strive together, so they're in some sort of fist fight, and a pregnant woman gets hit, and her children come out, but there's no other harm. So she gives birth prematurely. But the baby is fine, and mom is fine, so there's no other harm. Then the one who hit her shall surely be fined, as the woman's husband shall impose on him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. Now you remember, I mentioned that in all of this information that we're getting here, that judges are going to use it as a framework to deal with individualized cases, because no case is exactly the same. There's always little bitty tiny tweaks or differences, and the judges are the ones that take those into consideration and make adjustments to the punishment accordingly. So in this case, the baby comes early because mom got probably gut punched by accident in the middle of this fight. And so the husband says, hey, the baby's okay. My wife's basically okay. Maybe a little bit of bruising. But man, this guy needs to pay some money for the trouble they caused. And he can ask for a certain amount. It's like asking for damages. The judges then can say, all right, that sounds fair to us. Pay him. That's if the baby comes out and there's no problem and mom has no problem. What if there is a problem? That's verse 23. And folks, this should be very much taken in consideration when we talk about the issue of abortion. Because the baby is considered fully human and of full value in this story here, in this context. And that is the way that I think the fruit of the womb should always be considered. The fruit of the womb is a gift from God and should be treated with great respect. So verse 23, if there is harm to either baby or mom, then you shall pay life for life. So if the baby is dead or dies, the person who did the punching that caused this could be executed. If mom dies because of this incident, then the person who did the punching could be executed. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Now this is the eye for an eye passage that gets quoted by people a lot. And it is specifically about this instance of a pregnant woman being punched in the middle of a fight that she's not part of. And if there is a problem, then there needs to be an appropriate response to that problem. So if the baby gets born with an eye that's been gouged out because of the problem, then the judge could order the offender to have his eye removed. If the baby comes out with a missing hand or a deformed hand, then the offender could have something done to their hand. It's basically the idea of you should have thought before you did anything, and now you need to have the same thing happen to you that you did to somebody else. Now, a lot of people object to this, but it is the ultimate form of fairness, and it has a chilling effect. That's what's intended by this, that you will think before engaging in any activity that might cause harm to someone else, because that harm might rebound back on you. Verse number 26, same concept, but this time we're going to talk about those indebted servants again. Remember that these are people that owed money, couldn't pay it off by normal means, so they became contract slaves. And the contract could be sold from one person to another. All right, so verse 26, when a man strikes the eye of his slave, male or female, and destroys it. So you remember we were talking about earlier corporal punishment happening sometimes from a master to a slave. If the master is mean or angry and smacks the person in the eye and they lose their eye, the master doesn't get his eye gouged out. What happens is the indebtedness contract is zeroed. He shall let the slave go free because of his eye. If he knocks out the tooth of his slave, male or female, he shall let the slave go free because of his tooth. And so this also was supposed to have a chilling effect, so that those who held indebtedness contracts, if they had a problem with their servant, that they got frustrated with them, they still needed to restrain themselves any type of corporal punishment. Because if you get carried away, the contract could be zeroed out and you'll lose all of that money that you had invested in the purchase of this contract, or this person becoming your personal slave because of their indebtedness to you. Verse 28. And remember, there's like just all sorts of different things that come up in this session between God and Moses on Mount Sinai in the later hours of Pentecost. Verse 28. When an ox gores a man or a woman to death, the ox shall be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten. And this goes back to, again, Genesis chapter 9, where God said that he would hold an accounting for the blood of any human being, whether that blood was spilled by an animal or by a human. The man who sheds man's blood shall by man have his blood shed. And so the same would be true for animals. If you've got an animal that kills a person, then that animal's life is forfeit. And even the flesh is off limits. You can't just turn it into a steak dinner. You have to let it go because that animal caused the death of another person. And that's just inappropriate. It's not right because human life is precious because human life is made in the image and likeness of God. However, the verse does go on to say, but the owner of the ox shall not be liable. Now, the reason that comes up at first is because of what is mentioned next. But if the ox has been accustomed to gore in the past, meaning it was known that this ox was dangerous and would poke at people with its horns, maybe it actually got somebody in the leg before, or it got somebody in the arm before, didn't kill them, just hurt them. And in those cases, of course, the owner of the animal would have had to pay damages for those people that got harmed. But if that ox, which had been known to cause trouble in the past, ends up killing someone, and its owner has been warned and has not kept it in, and it kills a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death. So this time, because the owner had known what was going on and not taken proper steps, like having the animal's horns taken off or having it pinned up or just killing it and turning it into a whole bunch of steaks, he's now responsible for the death of that person. And so he can be executed. Now, he doesn't have to be executed, because according to verse number 30, it says, if a ransom is imposed on him, meaning if the judge looks at the case and goes, yeah, you made a bad call, you made a stupid decision by not doing something about this animal, but I don't think there was malice involved in it, let's have you pay a big time price to the people who lost their loved one. So that's one possibility. If the judge says, no, you know what? I think you liked having a deadly ox around, and I think that you were perfectly fine if it killed your neighbor. So, no, I am not going to allow you to be redeemed. You will be executed because you were basically an accomplice to the ox. But verse 30 says, if a ransom is imposed on him, then he shall give for the redemption of his life whatever is imposed on him. Verse 31, if it gores a man's son or daughter, it shall be dealt with according to the same rule. So if the man's own family members are harmed, it doesn't matter that it's all in the family. There still needs to be a reckoning. The animal needs to be destroyed, minimal. And if it was known that the animal was doing this and the animal's owner had been warned, then not only did he lose a family member, he's also going to be executed, or he will have to pay a monster fine to somebody. Now, what if it ends up goring a slave that's paying off a debt? If the ox gores a slave, male or female, the owner shall give their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. Now, it doesn't say here that the slave was killed. It just says that they gored a slave. And so, of course, the slave can't work. So the owner of the animal has to pay 30 shekels of silver to the master of the indebtedness slave. Now, 30 shekels is basically 60 days' wages. So he's effectively paying for more than 2 months of this person not being able to work off his indebtedness. Now, those days are still going to be counted as days working off the indebtedness, but it's going to be the ox owner that foots the bill for that. Continuing on, verse 33. When a man opens a pit, so he's digging a hole for some reason, or when a man digs a pit and does not cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls into it, the owner of the pit shall make restoration. He shall give money to its owner, and the dead beast shall be his. So he is responsible for the death of somebody else's animal. So effectively, he bought the animal. You broke it, you bought it. Now he gets to keep the animal's meat. If the ox actually died right there in front of the guy that owned the pit, then he could cut its throat and he could still use its meat. But the donkey would just be dead because it's not a meat animal anyway. So he couldn't make it kosher by cutting its throat immediately. So effectively, people have to be responsible for how their actions affect negatively upon other people. Everybody needs to think before they act. That's the lessons to be learned here. It's more of that, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Verse 35, when one man's ox butts another so that it dies, so we're back to the ox killing again, then they shall sell the live ox. Now this is a little different. And share its price, and the dead beast also they shall share. So you've got one ox that ends up killing another ox. And so the living ox is sold off to somebody else, and the money gets split. And the dead beast apparently has got its throat cut immediately after it was killed, and so it is now kosher meat, and so they've split that up as well. And so, there's loss, but it is mitigated in some way by these actions. Verse number 36, or if it's known that the ox had been accustomed to gore in the past and its owner had not kept it in, he shall repay ox for ox and the dead beast shall be his. Meaning, if he screwed up big time, then the animal gets sold or just given to the other guy, and the dead animal becomes his. And so he's the one that feels the biggest bite of loss, and that is fair. Chapter number 22. Let's go into the area of theft. Because remember, in the Ten Commandments, you shall not steal. Verse 1 of chapter 22. If a man steals an ox or a sheep, and he kills it, or he sells it, he shall repay 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. So basically, he steals and then disposes of the animal so that it can't be given back. And then he gets busted. Well, he has to give five oxen in place of that one oxen that he stole, and four sheep in the place of the one sheep that he stole. That's a good chilling effect on thievery, isn't it? Now, if a thief is found breaking in and he's struck so that he dies, there shall be no blood guilt on him. So if you're like waking up in the middle of the night and you realize, oh no, there's somebody in my house, and you grab the baseball bat or you grab your magnum and you see a form and it's coming at you and you strike out or you pull the trigger and the person gets killed, then that's on them. They shouldn't have been there. It's kind of like the castle doctrine that we've heard in our modern day defense of self-defense in our country. But there is a caveat that needs to be taken in here. Verse 3, but if the sun has risen on him, there shall be blood guilt for him. Meaning, you can't just kill somebody that's stealing from you. If you can see them and you can know whether or not they are a threat or whether or not, they are a danger, then you can't use lethal force. And this is actually very appropriate for our own time period. I was always taught the doctrine, military and private, you use only the amount of force necessary to stop the threat. That's it. And the reason you do it that way is because even though they might be your enemy, they are still people. They are still human beings. They are still made in the image of God. And you have to take that in consideration. So the principle that is put here is if you can clearly see what the circumstance is, you must refrain from lethal force unless absolutely necessary. And if you don't, then you become accountable. It says, he shall surely pay, for if he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. So if you catch the thief, then he is treated as a thief. He is going to end up paying back what he was attempting to steal, by the way, plus damages. But I will throw in here, if you killed him in daylight, then the judges are going to have to decide whether that was a justified killing or whether or not it was manslaughter or murder. Because you can't just kill somebody for theft. That's not the proper penalty. Verse number 4, if the stolen beast is found alive in his possession, whether it is an ox or a donkey or a sheep, he shall pay double. And remember, up at the very beginning of the chapter, if he didn't have the original oxen, he had to pay back five times. If he didn't have the original sheep, he had to pay back four times. But if he still has the animal, he gives the animal back plus another one. So he has to pay back double. And that is fair remuneration. And by the way, that was the end of the punishment. You didn't warehouse this guy somewhere. He didn't have to go to jail or prison for a period of time. He paid back what he took plus the penalty amount, and that was the punishment. Verse number 5. If a man causes a field or a vineyard to be grazed over or overgrazed and lets his beast loose and it feeds in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best of his own field and in his own vineyard. All right, so you've got your animals that belong to you, and you allow them to wander over onto the neighbor's property, and they start eating your neighbor's wheat, or they start nibbling your neighbor's vines, then you have to pay all that back because you should have kept control of your own animal. And the judges, of course, could add a little extra to the penalty if they thought that you had been particularly bad in keeping your animal home. A little bit more of restitution. Verse number 6. If fire breaks out and catches in thorns so that the stacked grain or the standing grain or the field is consumed, he who started the fire shall make full restitution. So you got to keep track of your campfire or your trash burning fire, your cook fire, because if it gets loose and it burns people's stuff, then you have to pay those people for their stuff. That is only fair. And I actually think there's some places that still have that sort of law on the books, that if you were responsible for starting a wildfire, then you are responsible for paying for every bit of damage that that wildfire caused. And that should be a good enough reason to make sure that you're extra careful with fire that might cause damage to other people's property. Well, we're going to put our marker right there and not get started in the next section. Remember again that this is God and Moses going back and forth over some of the details of how to handle the cases that will come out of the Ten Commandments and the rules that Israel is going to live by in their new land.